League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Back to the show. You know, we're doing this Facebook Live thing. I've been a little bit restrained in doing it, but giving it a shot. We'll see what you guys think about it. It is kind of fun to see some of your thoughts coming in here throughout the show. Okay, so second hour here, we got a great hour here. We got Randy Waldrum, the head coach of the Houston Dash of the NWSL. Randy, thank you for being here and welcome in.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure, Glenn.
All right, right next to him, the one and only Matt Peterson will be calling a lot of the NWSL games for women's soccer fans this year. Matt, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me back.
Get that microphone close. There you go, Matt Peterson. And Jesus Martinez, he heads up one of the great supporters groups here in Houston, the Bayou City Blues. He's been on the show before, as has Randy and Matt. Thank you for coming in, Jesus.
Glenn, it feels good to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what we want. We want everybody to feel good here. I'm going to start off with you, Randy. Let's just get a little synopsis right now where the Houston Dash is heading into 2017 here.
Well, we just started last week, first week of our preseason. Our schedule obviously is a little shorter than the Dynamo, so we're a little behind where they are at this point. But a good first week. Went down to Dallas on an event that our rivals, FC Dallas, put together for us down there and played Baylor University on Sunday evening and got a chance to see some things that we needed to see out of our new players. But really, really excited about this group, Glenn, just because I think it's for the first time since I've been here, I really feel like we have most of all the pieces in place. It's been taking me about a year longer than I anticipated to get this done. When you build a collegiate program, you usually kind of have a 3 to 5 year window, and I thought we could get it done in three. And I think maybe one of the drawbacks early on that was new for all of us was that expansion year. And coming in with such a short window of 90 days to get ready, I think in hindsight, probably set us back a little bit, as exciting as it was for us to get the team at the time. But I think we've kind of recovered from it now with a philosophy of the way we're drafting and trying to build a young team. I think we started that last year, and I think the fans could at least see, even though we didn't accomplish on the field really all I wanted to, I think the team has at least gotten better talent-wise each year. So I'm really looking for a big year this year. We added a few new players that I think can finish out some of those spots that we were a little deficient in. So just anxious about it and getting a lot of feedback from our fans who seem excited about it as well.
How much pressure do you feel to get into the playoffs this year? I mean, look, you're in a pressure-filled job. I know you put pressure on yourself. But how much pressure do you feel from the outside? Because, you're in a unique position because it's also a league that's really trying to sink its roots here. Sure. So you're wearing a lot of different hats. You're not just managing and coaching a team.
Right. No, I feel a lot of pressure. I mean, and I think in this business you feel pressure. Whether you're winning or you're not, it never seems to be good enough. And I can tell our fans there's nobody that is going to, want to succeed more than me and our team this year. So it's certainly disappointing when we don't reach the things that we feel like we should have reached. And I felt like last year was one of those that I probably, in hindsight, did a lot of things. I would have done them differently, had I had a chance to have done a do-over there with it. So I do feel, that there's certainly pressure in this job, especially in the world of professional sports or high-profile college athletics. Your job's always on the line, and we feel the pressure. But I think that's what makes coaches and players tick in this environment. Is you're really only as good as your last game, and we see it in every sport. A coach wins a championship, and then the next thing next year he's off to a bad start, and he's gone at the end of the year, and that's just the nature of the beast that we're in. But I think that's what makes us thrive. And I embrace that challenge, and I'll be the first to tell you if we don't succeed, then that's on me, and maybe things need to go in a different direction. But I think at this point in time, I am really happy with where we've come from the beginning to where we are today. Like I said, I think it's taken us a season longer than I'd hoped. But I do think this team's really going to be a team that can push all the way for the playoffs at the end of the year.
And Randy Waldrum, as everybody knows, a long history here in Texas, also Notre Dame winning a national championship. I've got some interesting player development questions for you tonight before you escape this room. Jesus Martinez, I mean, the good times are rolling for you Chelsea boys now, right? It was a little rough last year, the year before you win the title, and it goes to the bottom. I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster. You guys really live and breathe it with your supporters group, don't you?
It's a different season, obviously, Glenn, as you said, from last year. I think especially after Mourinho was let go and before the end of the first half of the season, Chelsea fans knew that what happened the year prior was never going to continue, and we knew that it was going to be a rebuilding process. Fortunately, this season's been a little bit different, right? The first part of the season was a little difficult, especially after that last two losses we had back-to-back against Liverpool and Arsenal. We went on that, 13-match winning streak, and then things changed a little bit, but we're still looking strong. 10 points ahead above Tottenham, which is very comfortable with the 10 matches left in the season. So if you look at it this way, compared to last year, we're a little bit happier. going back home to Stamford Bridge and watching a match is so much better. Going to the pub over at King's Court to watch a match with the Bayou City Blues is a little bit better.
I heard last year people were a little nervous going to Chelsea games because everybody was in a little bit of a bad mood.
That's what happens when a good reputation follows a winning club, right? And you expect to do better than what was given last season, but it's neither here nor there. I think that last season was only a building block of what this season has provided for us, and you can't take away what Antonio Conte, not only passionately as a manager and as a man, what he's done for the club, but statistically and what he's been able to do with the players and bring out the best of the players who were faulted for no reason last year during our most difficult time in the last 15 years.
Yeah, he's revived. Guys look completely different, like Hazard, and who probably just packed it in when Mourinho was the coach. By the way, Mourinho's a Judas now?
Mourinho is not a
Judas. We don't love him anymore?
Mourinho did what he needed to do. Any one of us is going to leave a job and go to another job. We're going to expect to, that's part of
life.
But
we're not
going to
get called a Judas. I don't agree with the Judas part.
But there have been some things that Jose Mourinho has said about the club since he joined Manchester United that has upset many people back home in London and even myself. But I would never call him a Judas. He would have done what you and anybody else would have done. You get fired from a job, you go to the next best thing, and you make the best of it. And that's exactly what he's doing. And I think what Manchester United has done in their, 18 matches now that they've gone on unbeaten, if I'm not mistaken, he's done a superb job. And he still goes down as the greatest manager that we've ever had. No matter where he goes and what he's done, he deserves a little bit of respect from the Chelsea supporters.
I like that. Now, Antonio Conte comes in as we bring in Matt Peterson. So you know what I like about this, and I know Randy's going to like this. He comes in, doesn't go about dramatically changing things. He gets N'Golo Kanté, right, from Leicester, makes a great signing, and at the right point changes to a three-back system, and it off and running it goes. This, to me, was pretty special what he has done now.
Yeah, I haven't watched Chelsea enough to really be an expert on that exact question, but I think they've always had a good team. I think last year was sort of a fluke with Hazard's down season and just seemed like just a general malaise within the team and obviously with what happened with Mourinho. But I think Conte's been great. They've always had a good attack. They're always good from front to back. So I think everything's kind of gone right for them. And I think it's interesting what the foreign managers have brought into that league tactically because, as much as some of the English folks complain about the foreign managers, it's the Italians and Spaniards and others that have really changed sort of the playing style for a lot of these teams.
Yeah, and I think you can make a nice comparison in Major League Soccer, Randy, with what Tata Martino has done with Atlanta. He's coaching that level of player, which are excellent players, but let's face it, it's not Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
And he's coaching the same style of play, the same system that he did at Barcelona and Argentina.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see how Atlanta continues to progress through the season as they get used to his ways. And I think it's interesting, Glenn, you brought on a Chelsea guy and a Man U guy in the same room, in the same round table.
I'm in between.
You're sitting
separated.
Yeah, we're separated. But no, seriously, it's it's been it's hard for me to say, but it has been fun to watch. You always have to appreciate when a manager and players come in and they kind of get revitalized and there's a rejuvenation and they're having success. And now because of that, you know, success breeds more. And to me, they're just playing with this confidence that they're making their luck. You know, I mean, it's even when things go poorly for them, they find a way to turn it and get the result. And that's what was not happening for them, you know, last year. I do think that Conte has made a big difference in that team too. And I think you look at the difference from Leicester, you know, without him and the struggles that they're having and what he's done. And then to see Hazard kind of turn it back around to play. I think it was one of those years and possibly all the stuff we hear about Mourinho and the players and, you know, just revitalized, I think, you know, that we've got to see them play and to transform this into a three back. I think David Luiz coming back has been a big addition. And, you know, now you've got three central defenders there that can play well together, and they have the pace on the flanks to do it. I think the interesting thing about it is, you know, now it's kind of like a World Cup to me. You see a World Cup, and then the next thing you know, all the teams are trying to play that system of that successful team.
Now, yeah, I love that. Every World Cup, right? Yeah. The trend comes out. Every youth field in America, yeah, they're doing the same system as the World Cup winning team.
I'm noticing already in the preseason, the NWSL, two or three of the teams are playing with a three-back, you know, experimenting with that. And Jill with the national teams playing with, you know, trying to play a three-back. And, you know, it's just one of those things you have to be really careful. It's all about your personnel, isn't it, you know, and how you play. And but they've been great. They've been a lot of fun to watch. I wish my team was in a little better position than we are, but, you know, hats off to Chelsea.
Progress being made. Look, Antonio Conte at Juventus in Italy obviously showed us a lot. To me, it's not surprising. I mean, because he picked up a team that had a lot of guys that were not playing, in my opinion, very humbly, for a manager. And they don't have to play well Jesus, to win matches. That's another sign, as Randy kind of pointed out, of a good team, Matt.
Look what he did with that Italian Euro squad. It was an overage somewhat type of a squad, correct? I mean, we had players that were on the wrong side of 30, but yet that match, that when they were eliminated against I'm sorry to do this on the radio. It was Germany, correct? So when they were eliminated, but the Italy squad that he had was far better than you could have expected, especially at that age. So he knows how to manage players, and he knows how to get the best every single ounce that you have to provide. He's going to get out of you. And he's been able to do that with David Luiz, Gary Cahill, Cesar Azpilicueta, N'Golo Kanté, and probably the biggest drama queen in the Premier League, I hate to say this, in Diego Costa, but he's brought out the best in Diego Costa even this season. But then you look at guys like Cesc Fabregas, who last season, Mourinho shunned him towards the end of his life at Chelsea, and then Gus Hiddink came in and didn't really give him the opportunities he deserved. But he has found the best that he can, playing that three-back with those midfielders. And it's impressive that the passion that a manager shows on the sidelines can incorporate itself into the 11 players who are playing on the pitch. And then
Let me just stop you for a second. Ahead. Is there a faster team in transition
than Chelsea?
This is like the charge of the light brigade. I mean, it's unbelievable because it's not two, three guys. It's four and five guys. It is pretty incredible to watch this crystallize in front of your eyes.
That's how Leicester won the title last season, if you think about it. Yeah. Sincerely, they on the counterattack. Yeah. Chelsea's done a lot of their goals off of that this season as well.
And I tell you what, they're so efficient on the counter, too. I mean, it's almost every counterattack results in – seems like almost everyone results in an opportunity. You know, there's a lot of teams that try to counter, but it breaks down, you know, after the first or second pass. Yeah. And Chelsea are so efficient at that. And they really exploit that space, whether they're dragging Hazard inside underneath Costa or, you know, I mean, they just find those areas to really transition into. They're just a lot of fun to watch. I mean, you know, they come back in and collectively defend as a unit and break out as good as anybody I've seen in a long time.
So on that note, I'm going to bring you in, Matt. This is what we're seeing with the Dynamo, too. I mean, this is what we've been asking for. A wide game with penetrators, with pace. I mean, you talk about entertainment value the first three games. These three games I've called have uplifted a commentator. It has been so much fun to call these games. And we always have to talk about the value of entertainment in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, it's definitely been fun. It's been exciting. I think Kyoto is probably the most unheralded signing this offseason in MLS, I don't think anybody, including me, realized how good he was, because when you come from Olympia, no one's really watching Olympia outside the Champions League. You don't know how it's going to translate. But he's been just as good for me as Boniek when he came to the Dynamo in 2012, and he's scoring goals. I think more people were excited about Elise because of his pedigree and the fact that Monterrey bought him and his Olympics and all that he's done. They've been – both have been outstanding. I think the only thing for me now is, how is this team going to be better in the second half? Because – in the first half, it's great. They're scoring goals. They have the energy. But by the 60, 65th minute, we've seen it in all three games, they're getting tired. You have the midfield three asked to do a lot. You have to bring on subs. And how do they change the game? What's the plan B? I think that's the question for the Dynamo is, I think they're being a great first half team. It's how do they do after the 50th, 60th minute if they don't have the lead?
Yeah, it is the obvious question. I thought there was a step up when they had the lead against Columbus, Randy. Mm-hmm. They came out and they pressed. They got their goals. And then in the second half, we saw them drop a little bit deeper now and become a true out-and-out counter-attacking team. So you address that as a manager.
Yeah, you know what I think we'll see, and again, it's just a guess. You know, Wilmer obviously has his plans in place for it. But, you know, I think at home, it's a great way to play. You know, that's what the fans want to see. We have, the benefit of home field advantage when we get deeper into the summer, when the heat comes up. This could be really effective for us at home. I think over the course of a long season, you may expose yourself some. And what we may see him grow into, especially as he loses some of these players in and out with their national team responsibilities.
Randy, hold that thought, because we're going to come back to it, because we're up on a hard break here. I got to get a little bit of paying the bills in here. We're going to come back with more with Randy Jesus and Matt Peterson here. You can also join in, 713-780-3776. We'll continue to talk about the Dynamo and their system and how they figure it out here. Liberty Kitchen, great food, great friends, lunch, supper, and brunch. Think of it as modern American comfort food. Classics taken up several notches. Great hamburgers, mac and cheese, chicken fried, mom's spaghetti chowder. They've got farm stand crisp food. And Liberty Kitchen is going to put their stamp on it. They'll claim it. They'll own it. It's big flavor served at a neighborhood social. It's making me hungry. Liberty Kitchen staples. Deviled eggs topped with fried oysters. Dixie fried chicken. Infamous burger bowls. They got the raw bar. Oysters on the half shell with a cold beer. Nothing beats it. Signature cocktails. Now you understand why Liberty Kitchen is a regular stop. Liberty Kitchen, lunch, supper, and brunch. Heights, River Oaks, Rice Village, Garden Oaks, Treehouse, Memorial City. We'll take a Bud Light break. We'll come back. We got more to come.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, quick word here for Azure Salon in the heart of River Oaks and in the West Ave Shopping Center. Stylist at Azure Salon, they keep me looking sharp on television. Go in there all the time. You know, I need all the help I can get, and Azure Salon definitely does it. Azure Salon is the place to go. Ladies, they have you covered. Color, cuts, and extension. It's azuresalon.com. All right. Prior to the show, had an opportunity to catch up with U.S. International Sebastian Legette. This is ahead of what is a very huge game for the U.S. against Honduras on Friday in San Jose. We're going to listen to the Legette interview, and then we're going to get the reaction of the panel, Randy Waldrum, Matt Peterson, and Jesus. All right, here we go. And as everybody knows, Friday, it is a monster World Cup qualifier for the United States. They'll take on Honduras, the first of two matches over the course of a couple days. But after losing to Mexico and Costa Rica, it certainly does paint a pretty very serious picture on Friday night. And we are pleased to bring onto the show right now Sebastian Legette, who joins us with the U.S. national team. Sebastian, thank you very much for carving out the time for us.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so let's just, basic question off the top here is sort of the mood around the camp heading into Friday. Obviously, we all know this is a big moment here when it comes to World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, no, it's obviously a big moment. It's a big game, and we're very much aware of that. But I think we're at the same time, we're very calm and know what we have to do as a group. And, you know, it's Bruce's first qualifier, and I think we've done a pretty good job of preparing for it.
What does he do as a manager to sort of take the pressure off? Because, you know, our soccer culture has grown here. There's tremendous interest around this game on Friday. Our soccer culture, in some ways, is a little bit nervous because they don't want to see the United States not qualify for a World Cup. What does he do to take the pressure off?
Well, I think, I mean, since I've been working with him for the last, you know, almost 2 years now, you know, there's never a sense of panic. You know, it doesn't matter how bad things look or how bad things actually are. You know, he always, it's very contagious, his sense of calmness, you know, and I think the whole group has felt it. And I think we're very just, I know there's a lot of pressure, but, you know, we just know what we have to do and we have a game plan and that's how we go about it.
Sebastian Legette joining us here, ahead of the United States and Honduras on Friday. You personally, where do you feel more comfortable playing, in the interior of a midfield or widening the game out wide?
I think it becomes more. It's not a sense of just comfort and like where I, you know, where I want to play. It's just where I feel most effective is playing more interior. But I've played out wide and I know my role and I know what I have to do to be effective. In the game playing out wide. So, you know, I can do both, but, you know, obviously last season, you know, a lot of people liked me, you know, in more of a central mid sort of number eight role. And it went very good for me, but, you know, maybe on this team I might play out wide and we won't know until tomorrow. There's still a lot more preparation to do, but, you know, we'll see.
Do you think in Major League Soccer in particular that you see maybe a little bit more of a return to wingers that resemble maybe a little bit more traditional wingers?
Yeah, I think there's a couple around the league that you can say are like that. This league is just growing so much. There's so many different types of teams and so many different types of players, you know. It's a very interesting topic, you know, as far as wingers go. But, I mean, you know, I know how I want to play, and if I have to play out wide, I do know the role well.
Sebastian Legette joining us here, a U.S. national team member. Let's talk about your upbringing. Argentine parents, Northern California. Has the Argentine soccer culture worn off on you a little bit through your father, maybe?
Yeah, talk about that.
I heard the oh my god. That's probably got some good stories behind it.
This man is. He's an absolute fanatic about this game, and yeah, no, he's it's definitely won me this, you know, since I was born. Honestly, this guy's he's crazy for lack of a better choice of word.
Yeah, but that's a great thing, right? To have a father that is so passionate and connected to the game. I mean, obviously, it's been a big influence on your life and your career.
Yeah, I know, a huge influence. I think it definitely made a difference in my career. I mean, you know, the tough times, you know, I think his passion, got me through it, and he sort of ignited my passion by doing that, you know. And he gets a lot of credit for as far as I've come now, you know, to this point. I think he gets a lot of credit for it, for sure.
He's U.S. midfielder Sebastian Legette, ahead of World Cup qualifying the United States on Friday against Honduras. I assume he's an incredibly proud man. What has occurred with you in your career?
Definitely. You know, I think he's just seen how hard I've worked to get to this point, and you know, I've tried to take every opportunity that I've had, and I've taken nothing for granted. And you know, I think Friday, Friday will definitely. Will be a sign of how far I've come, you know.
You signed a contract, your first professional contract with West Ham United, historic club in England, in September of 2010. Just kind of give us a Cliff Notes version of what went on there, because you were there for 5 years.
Right. Yeah. No. I was there for a while, and it was a fantastic club. I mean, especially growing up there, and I learned so much. It didn't work out in the end as far as, you know, the manager that was there, and that's just part of the game, that's part of the business. And it was difficult to leave, but I did learn so many things that I use till this day, and I wouldn't take it back.
Yeah, I got to think, what an unbelievable, at only 24 years of age now, you're only 24, what an unbelievable bank of experiences for you to go back to, because I'm sure you were in some very difficult situations over there in that environment.
Right, yeah, and I think the fact that, you know, I mean, a lot of people can go through situations at a very young age, and everybody has different problems, but I was, most of the time I was alone, and sort of had to figure it out on my own. And I had to grow up quick, and you know, it's, you know, over there it's very much a man's game, and you just have to be an adult and all around on the field and off the field, and you know, I had to take care of business, and you know, I'm definitely grateful for it though. I think in the end I'm very thankful.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Honduras. What is it about Honduras that makes them dangerous? Obviously, it's a country that has grown a lot in CONCACAF over the last 4 or 5 years, but how about some of the things and characteristics that stick out to you about Honduras?
I think their counterattack game is you know, very effective. I think they have a couple of good players that can definitely hurt us, and I think tactically they're not going to make it easy. So it's up to us to break them down and really, you know, try to use that home field advantage and really dominate the game as much as possible.
And I think you're referring to a couple of guys that we're very familiar who are off to great starts in MLS down here, in Ramel Kyoto and Albert Elise. And I guess to me it just says the wide area of the game is going to be very important.
Yeah, I think tactically for us, we have to be, you know, as well as we have to be, you know, good on the ball, I think we have to definitely, you know, defend very well and just be aware of their speed and their aggressiveness to go forward on the counter, you know, we are aware of that, and I do believe that we'll do a good job of it.
So when Bruce Arena got hired, I mean, without a doubt, a lot of the storyline was around, you know, Bruce's second time back in charge. There was a lot of feel-good going on. Is that stuff been tossed out the window? Is this all about business now? Because I almost thought it was a little bit of overkill, a little bit too much focus on the manager and not the task at hand now, because he is obviously the guy who's got a lead on Friday with his selection, with his tactics, and everything else that goes along with a big game like that.
Right. You know, yeah, there's a lot to go with it. I mean, you know, we're all in this situation now where we have to win this game, and you know, definitely sets the tempo for the rest of the qualifiers. And I mean, he he's very experienced, and the reason why he's as successful as he has been. And I mean, that's just the truth. You know, it is a huge game, and we know that. But we can't just, you know, sabotage it by putting, you know, unnecessary pressure on ourselves. We just kind of have to play our game, and we know the manager has our back, and you know, we believe in the tactics and the way he wants to play.
January, you got called in for the first time to the United States national team. When you put that jersey on, and I think you've got two caps now, when you put that jersey on, what type of feeling, what was that like the first time? Because that's dream of so many.
It really is something else. I mean, it's, you know, it's not like a joke or like something I should say. I mean, it really is a blessing. I mean, because, you know, to play for the country, it's just a difference. A different sensation, and you know, especially when I was playing, you know, after when the whistle blew after both games, you know, it's just surreal. And you know, but now I'm glad I got those two games out of the way, and it's more of I can prepare as just another player on the national team, not just a, you know, someone that's new. I know it's my first qualifier, but I truly feel like I can be part of this, and you know, that's how I'm going to look at it moving forward.
Do you get the sense that you're playing for the people that support the team, that you're playing for your countrymen? You know, because in this day and age with guys internationally playing for differing countries and jumping around to try and get to a World Cup, but do you really feel like you're playing for the U.S. people? Because I get that sense.
Yeah, no, and honestly, I really do, because, you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I was born here, and obviously that helps. And this is my soil, and it. I really do love this country and the people in it, and I feel like especially in this day and age where there's a lot of stuff going on in America, and I feel like if we can make this sport something where people find it very inspiring, and I think it'll be great for the country, and if we can make that spark, I think it'll be huge.
Sebastian, thank you so much for coming on. Only 2 days ahead of what is a very important World Cup qualifier. I've enjoyed watching you in Major League Soccer and with the national team.
Thank you.
And we wish you the best of luck on Friday night. We know you're going to do great.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Sebastian Legette, United States national team. You've seen him in Major League Soccer. Outstanding player. Only 24 years of age still. And a guy that, not only with the national team, but when you're watching Major League Soccer, keep an eye on him. Great technical base as well.
All right, so Randy Waldrum, manager, head coach of the Houston Dash. What jumped out at you from that interview with Sebastian Legette?
Yeah, two quick things, I think, Glenn. One was the professionalism, you know, where he talked about his role, whether it's wide or inside. You didn't hear him talk too much about his own personal preferences. It was all about the team. And then I think the maturity that he comes, you know, he's obviously gotten his opportunity later in his career on the national team. But I think the maturity that he brings with it and the calmness that it sounds like the team feels with Bruce and the pressure that's on sounds like it's a really good tone about just being diligent about your work.
Very nice, Randy. I like that. Nice stuff. What'd you hear out of that, Jesus?
I felt the same exact thing. It's nice to see that. You have a player for the U.S. Men's National Team that it's not about me and where I fit in. It's about me where I fit in best for my country. Correct? You have a team that's coming off of two back-to-back losses. They're playing in a Honduras squad who played well against Trinidad and Tobago, coming off of a win. And really, what I got out of that conversation is what can we as a country, we as a team, do? Not I against this big opponent coming up this weekend against Honduras. And that's the big point. And I think as a U.S. Men's National Team supporter, for anybody who supports the national team, that interview alone should tell you not just what he feels, but what the rest of the players feel for the next game.
Matt, how about you?
Yeah, just his humility. I think we've always known him for his exuberance and his personality. He goes by Du Bois. He walked into the Galaxy locker room, some big stars, had a lot of confidence. I always think of him as confident on the field, which I like about him. I think we need more of that from the younger players. But I think just his humility and down-to-earth qualities he showed in that interview.
All right, we're going to hit a break here. We're going to come back more with Randy Waldrum of the Houston Dash. We'll begin to talk a little bit more Dash as well, because we've got to get Randy on that. Matt Peterson is going to be calling NWSL games. Jesus Martinez, we have an announcement here about a big event coming up. Go for it.
So Friday, June the 16th, the Houston Red Army, the official Manchester United supporters group of Houston, and the Bayou City Blues, the official Chelsea supporters group of Houston, we're inviting two big players from our clubs, Norman Whiteside and Bobby Tambling, to Houston for an event in June 16th that's in support of Cure Childhood Cancer. Kick Cancer is something that Glenn and I have worked with in the past, Glenn more specifically. For more information, you can reach myself, Jesus Martinez, 1905@gmail.com, or Tom Clare at comcast.net.
And also Tom Clare's phone number, 281-812-4805. Come on, let's rally. We got to get people out to this thing. It's at the Doubletree. Food, drink, amazing stories. You're going to hear about what it was like in playing in England before the Premier League.
Yeah.
Norman Whiteside at 17 for Northern Ireland. Bobby Tambling, one of the all-time leading scorers. Let's get after it. We need you, Houston. We'll take a break. We got more to come.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, soccer fans, Kings Court, 903 Hutchins and Edo on the corner of Walker and Hutchins, 13 TVs. Kings Court, Jay is down there, great guy. Premier League matches, World Cup qualifiers, you name it, it'll be there. 24 taps, full bar, extensive selection of spirits, Indian British cuisine. Also, El Batallon hangs out there. Pre and post game for Dynamo matches or Dash matches, great place to go. Rooftop patio, it has a real soccer pub feel. Again, we remind you of the Sportsman's Dinner. Really, it's a night with two legendary soccer players. Norman Whiteside of Manchester United in Northern Ireland, Bobby Tambling of Chelsea. This is to benefit the Curing Children's Cancer Fund, cccfund.org. Tickets 281-812-4805. It's Friday, June 16th, $135 a ticket, 6:30 to midnight. It is dinner, drinks, you name it, top to bottom. There's raffles, auctions. You can personally get a connection with these guys. It's going to be an amazing night if you're a soccer fan. All right, welcome back, everybody. Randy Waldrum of the Houston Dash, Matt Peterson, who you're going to be hearing on NWSL broadcast. Jesus Martinez, the head of the Bayou City Blues Chelsea Supporters Club here in Houston. Randy, I go directly to you, and I just want to take you back into the team this year. A couple of players that you would say that would be ones to keep an eye on for the Houston Dash this year.
Well, I think it's going to be real interesting to see and watch Kalia continue to grow. Ojai, you know, finished out the season really well, and we want to hope that she can start off with that. And then a couple of new players. I think Janine Van Wyk, the South African center back that we've got, that's got about 140-some-odd caps playing for the national team. And then we added a new Brazilian, Bruna, that will be the other center back. And so those are a couple of new faces. And I'm excited about our young goalkeeper that we picked up in the draft, Jane Campbell. Looks like she's going to have a great future out of Stanford. And what a presence she has in goal. So those would be a few, I'd say.
By the way, back to Jane. I watched her when I was calling one of the national team games, training in camp with the team. She was in her college season. Yeah. Pretty impressive training habits.
Yeah, I tell you, she's imposing. She's very imposing. So those would be a few, I'd say, we need to keep an eye on.
All right, guys. Now, we're getting crazy here with all the ICC games this summer and everybody coming over to brand their teams, take home bucketfuls of money, and all of us over here are going to go to these games. I mean, there's no doubt these things sell out. So, Matt, I'm going to start with you and then go to Jesus and then to Randy. Good or bad for Major League Soccer?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think if someone's going to shell out $150 once a year and they don't, I mean, I guess it goes back to the team in some way, shape, or form, but they're not paying to watch MLS or NWSL. It's not a good thing. And it also just continues to keep that team in a different category and stratosphere. And, you know, you start spending more on that and then less on your own team, and it sort of just puts MLS further behind these European teams. So I think it's great. If you're a longtime fan of one of these big clubs and you want to watch them, more power to you. Go watch them. I have no problem with that at all. But I think at some point during the middle of your MLS season, have these friendlies come through year after year and kind of hijack the regular season, it's not a good thing.
Jesus, how about your thoughts on this? Because obviously, you know, these teams are hitting the shores here in the United States consistently.
I think what they're doing on their end is, I mean, to their advantage, it's a moneymaker. They're walking away with bags of money. Unfortunately for the teams here in the States, it kind of hinders the progress. But it kind of helps, too, in a way where you have supporters who may have not liked the football or the soccer per se, that like, as we do, but you know, watching these big European teams play in person might bring them into that MLS or you know the females league. You know, it might get them to start supporting their local clubs. I kind of see it as an advantage. At the same time, I do wish that the ICC would take it towards, you know, we put a break in that time of the year in the MLS season, and we have these European teams play friendly against MLS clubs, and it just gives that MLS exposure. If you really want the league to grow, I mean, that might be my opinion on that. It's good and bad, but I see why they're doing it, and it's like you said, it's just walking away with bags of money.
It seems their new idea, Randy, is, and they have played some MLS teams before, to Jesus's point, but it seems now it's like they're bringing the big rivalry games here, right? They're trying to pit United against City, Barcelona against Madrid.
Yeah, you know what? I'm excited to see it. I know it comes at a bad time with our league going on, but I do think it'll bring, you know, not every fan, even though they're football fans here in this country, not every fan is an MLS fan. And not every fan has an MLS team in their city or their area. So I do think it's great just to continue to grow the sport. And obviously, there's so many of us that love watching those big clubs come. So I get it a little bit on both sides, but I, for one, am pretty happy that they're coming.
Now, for you and the NWSL, as I switch gears a little bit here, heading into 2017, league-wide, what are the most important things to you? And what would you say to the fans league-wide What is the most important thing now for this league at this time and juncture in 2017?
Well, I think from a league standpoint, we still want to see it grow in attendance. You know, I think it's gotten better every year at the venues. The venues have gotten better. So if we can continue to still see that grow, I think the one exciting thing that's really happened this offseason is the television contract with Lifetime. And, you know, I think that will generate a lot of new interest from some families that maybe haven't watched or seen us before and had access to it. So we'll see how much that really plays a part, you know, in growing the interest level of the league. But I think those are going to be some keys for the league moving forward.
How about you? What's most important with you when it comes to style of play, purpose of play, entertainment, you know, because you're still in selling mode?
Yeah. Well, I heard you in your segment earlier before I came on, and you talked about the entertainment value that, sure, we want to play good football here in Houston, but we want to entertain the fans, and our fans won't come if it's not entertaining. And I've always kind of believed that in our sport, we're still trying to grow the sport, especially in the women's game. So I'd rather win a game 3 or 4-1 than I would win 1-0, you know? And so we've got to come out and make sure we're still entertaining and we still have that entertainment value, because I think the typical fan, as opposed to you and I, may not sit back and enjoy a team that's just going to kind of bunker in and defend to get a 1-0 win. But they'll come out if the game's wide open and see, you know, an attacking team. That's kind of the American mentality. So that's the way we want to play.
You know, I'm with you. If I see games like that now, I turn them off. I'm not going to waste my time anyway. I realize my life is short. And you know what? If I'm not seeing entertainment value added to it, consequence, all those things that we all want when we watch sporting events, I'm out. I'm not. I get you got to grind it out. And, of course, this is not a manager here talking. This is a radio host who played professionally. But I'm out because I'm not spending my time watching that.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. We see so many teams that are successful just sitting in like that. But I don't think that's what's going to grow the sport here, especially in the women's game. I don't think it grows it really in the men's game either. But, yeah, I think we want to be entertained, you know.
Don't you think, Matt, that we should be a little bit more critical of teams that don't play an attractive game, that don't create a lot of chances, that play for a set piece or a corner? I mean, look, I know we're not managers in here other than Randy, but, I don't know how you're going to sell it. And listen, as much as we hear about the Orlandos and the Atlantas, we got a lot of markets not doing very well. The DCs, the Columbuses. We got to go here to Houston, or we haven't turned it around here from an attendance standpoint.
Yeah, I do think there is criticism, though. Colorado last year almost won the Supporters' Shield, but they were roundly criticized for their style of play. Now, some purists that love...
But is there enough?
I don't know. I think it's getting there. I think nobody said, I can't wait to watch the Colorado Rapids play this weekend, right? People love their defense. They celebrated them as one of the best defensive teams in the league. And this is where I think that the interesting part is Pablo Mastroianni in press conferences really got defensive about it. He would say, I'm here to win games. I'm here to win 1-0. And that's all I'm here for. Now, ask his president that. Ask his owner that. Ask the person trying to sell tickets if the buck just stops at results. Because I don't think it does. But ex-players, you know, you talk to ex-players, they agree with him. They said, we're going to win 1-0. That's all we have to do. Because the players see it as, we need to win. This is my career on the line. So I do think there's a push and pull here with a lot of the clubs. But I do think entertaining soccer is what everyone wants. But some of these managers, you know, if you're Pablo Mastroianni and you're on the last end of your contract, you don't really care about the bigger picture. You just want to get a new deal and you want to get your team into the playoffs, and they had a really good year.
Yeah, that's fair. I think a lot of people from the early years of Major League Soccer, when it was just about winning, have lost a little sight about this is an entertainment business. And I know the same way. I was the same way in the beginning. Purist, it's all about just the – but, you know, when you think of it from a bigger perspective now, this is entertainment. I don't want to go to a game – and not be entertained. I don't want to go hear politics. I'm there to get away. I'm there to escape. I'm there to have fun. I'm there to enjoy a beautiful stadium. And I want to see guys flying at people, taking people on. I want to see an attractive brand within the context of a team sport. Jesus.
If you look at Europe, it doesn't matter. A lot of those clubs still fill out their stadiums, right?
Different story, history.
Here in America, you're competing against the entertainment of the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL. So a lot of these fans expect the MLS and the NWSL to do the same, and I think that's what they deserve. And in order for the game to grow in this country, I think they deserve that entertainment value. But I, as a purist, also appreciate that hard-fought 1-0, 2-1, 3-2, 4-3. I appreciate those kinds of wins. But not everybody.
That doesn't mean those aren't attack-oriented games that have chances and all those elements we look for. I'm not saying the game has to be 4-3. It can be a 0-0 game with two teams attacking.
And I would love that.
And trying to produce goals. And we've all watched those games where we love them. Yeah. Randy, any last thoughts?
No, I think it's the great thing is, you know, you and I, Glenn, been around this for a long time, and seeing where the sport's grown in the last 20 years has been amazing. And watching some of the new franchises, it's just a really exciting time now around the MLS and certainly with the NWSL as well.
No doubt about it. Matt, thank you very much for coming in tonight, and we wish you best of luck on all the NWSL games this year. We'll look forward to watching those.
Really looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Jesus, real quick, one more time. Pump our event. Jesus Martinez.
Friday, June the 16th, Bobby Tambling, second all-time goal scoring for Chelsea, and Norman Whiteside, Houston Red Army, Manchester United Group, and the Bayou City Blues. All the benefits go to Kick Cancer. You heard the names. You heard the emails and the phone numbers. Get in touch with us. It's going to a great cause. It's going to be a good evening.
281-812-4805. By the way, after that read, you got a future in radio, buddy. Nice job.
Thank you, sir.
I'll say goodnight for Randy, Matt, and Jesus. Good night, everybody. Thank you for tuning in, listening, and calling in.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.